The program is on at 7 o'clock Pacific time in Las Vegas, which means it's 8 o'clock if you're in the Mountain Time Zone in Denver, 9 o'clock if you're in Central Time Zone in Chicago, and 10 o'clock if you're in Eastern Time Zone in New York City. And the program is archived over on SpankWagon.net. SpankWagon's on every Friday from 7 until 9 o'clock Pacific time here in LV Rocks, followed by King Hesh. And the program is also podcasted. Thank you for everybody for listening to the podcast. And thank you for everybody listening live. We got the John, the Juke, Morgan, T-Monkey, I guess. I don't know. It's a Bush, derogatory Bush. I'm going to try and remain centrist here tonight. Bash had a message on my blog that I'm leading the liberal media and all that stuff. So I'm going to try and remain somewhat in the middle tonight. And the website is subject2discussion.com. Email is subject2discussion@lvrocks.com. And after the news to me, the news to you tonight will be Justin Gardner from the Dunkelvint centrist political blog. He's been gone for a few weeks, so people have been clamoring for his wonderful entrance music with the donkey goring the elephant. But and then in the second hour, we'll have a new guest to be on. His name is Justin Reddy. He was on a long time ago, I think when Rolando was here with me, and he's going to be on and talk about the congressional races and some other things that's going on. And then ending the program will be Koenig Rules. He's got some spoilers for the third season of Battlestar Galactica. And also we'll have a Doctor Who review. I want to say right now that Friday's episode was outstanding. So we'll have the ratings. And I'll also have some spoilers about the third season premiere. So, and with that, I'll start with the news to me. Today, of course, I have the papers. Of course, yesterday in the USA Today was the big thing about Phil Mickelson winning the Masters again. Good for him. And also have the headline about the protests in 100 cities set for Monday about the illegal immigration issue. And also on the bottom below the fold, as they say in the business, once foe McCain makes a friend of the Bush dynasty. INA run in 2008. Senator Wu's loyalists critical of him in 2000. So I think he's lost all his credibility right there, kissing up to the George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, the King Father, as we call him, you know, King George. So he's the King Father, like with the Queen Mother. And then today in the USA Today, they have the historic rallies, Voice a Dream. So they're kind of glomming on to the Martin Luther King address. And now this time, at least this time around, they're smarter. They were waving American flag. So last time around, they're waving the Mexican flag. So this time at that, and also they're waving Taco Bell banners around too. Now he got a discount yesterday at Taco Bell. No. And also they talked about the poll. Apparently, the majority of Americans want to let them stay, but tighten the borders. Like I said, you're gonna have to deport 12 million people. I don't know how that's gonna be possible to be done. And also below the fold, they say the states sign on to a 65% solution for funding schools. Apparently, they want to rework their budgets for the schools, where they'll put 65% of their money into the classrooms and only leave the remaining 35% for administration use. So see what happens there. And also, they have a little snapshot here, USA Today, about airline employment is down. This year, there's only 405,000 full-time employees working for the airlines. So the airlines are having some problems. And then I came across the National Enquirer today at work. They have the headline about inside Whitney Houston's drug den. So, and also Bobby Brown's sister tells all, "I did crack with Whitney," she says, allegedly. So, and our now get also, and then today also we had the USA Today Gallup poll. Said President King George's ratings, approval rating is for King George is 37%, disapproval rating is 60%. Wow. And then Senator Barbara Boxer, who actually, that's a trivia question, she was the third highest vote getter in the last election behind Bush and Kerry. It was Barbara Boxer, and she was on Hardball, which is celebrating its 9th anniversary, and saying that Democrats need to be back in power to check the president and the administration. Absolutely, they need to be back in power. Absolutely. Monday, they had rallies across the USA call for illegal immigrant rights. Hundreds of thousands joined National Day of Action in towns and cities, and we had quite a few protests here in Vegas, too. Hundreds of thousands of protesters turned out Monday in small towns and big cities across the United States, demanding that unaccounted immigrants get a chance to live the American dream. Blah, blah, blah. And let me see here. The protests began in morning in the communities on the East Coast and spread west. Two of the largest demonstrations were held in Washington, D.C. and Phoenix. Organizers said 500,000 attend the event in Washington and 200,000 in Phoenix. I wonder how they count those people. They had some bean counter up there counting the heads. I don't know. Although police did not provide official crowd estimates, and a nod to the criticism of demonstrators who waved foreign flags at earlier pro-immigration rallies, the Stars and Stripes were on prominent display in many of the Monday's events. So there you go. And on Sunday, we had they're prepping for the rallies. Thousands rally nationwide for immigrants. Tens of thousands of people turned, banged drums, waved U.S. flags, and marched in a protest Sunday, urging lawmakers to pass immigration reform. And this time, police estimate between 350 and 500,000 were on display in protests. Several of the demonstrations that drew thousands of protesters were in New Mexico, Minnesota, Michigan, Iowa, Utah, Oregon, Idaho, and California. And also, Sunday was the 30th anniversary of the fall of Saddam Hussein. And on Saturday, we had this is from Batavia, Ohio, nearly 30,000 pictures of Matt Maupin. There's this soldier that's been missing for 2 years over in Iraq. His mother is keeping up the campaign, thinking he's still alive. His mother is Carolyn Maupin, steadfastly hopes that someday someone will recognize Matt, and she is with an organization that sends care packages to troops in Iraq. Anyway, she puts pictures in each one of these care packages, hoping a soldier will spot her son. So he was a 20-year-old private first class in the Army Reserves when he was captured April 9, 2004, when his fuel convoy, part of the 724th Transportation Company, was ambushed west of Baghdad. So they did show a tape shortly after he was captured of an American soldier being shot, but they could not identify his son, Matt Maupin, as the one that was shot or not. And then Friday, we had the storms blowing through the Midwest. Tornadoes sweep through Tennessee and kill 11. So that was all over the news. Thursday, we had Scooter Libby testify that Vice President Shooter Cheney told him Bush had specifically authorized him to disclose certain information from the classified national intelligence estimate on Iraq. The newly disclosed documents, which came from the Special Prosecutor's Office, don't assert that Bush told Libby to out former CIA agent Valerie Plame. And in fact, says Bush was unaware of the role Libby played in the outing. And also we had the Views, Meredith Vieira. She's going to be taking over for Katie Couric on the Today Show. And, of course, she's going to be taking over for Dan Rather on the CBS Evening News. Wednesday, we had the Deputy Press Secretary for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security was charged with using a computer to seduce a child after authorities said he struck up sexual conversations with an undercover detective posing as a 14-year-old girl. That's Homeland Security there. I guess he is frisking her, I guess. Brian J. Doyle, 55, the fourth-ranking official, blah, blah, blah. And also they had another one that was apparently caught for exposing himself in a mall or something to some other girls. So CNN was talking about the political tidal wave in the midterm elections, but cautioned that with the GOP gerrymandered districts that there were fewer incumbents that are in danger this time around. And then Massachusetts passed a bill that made making health insurance mandatory. For those who do not get insurance, they will be fined. And Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu, she says that she will hold up President Bush's judicial nominees until he lives up to his promise of funding the recovery of Louisiana. And also, the last one is on a Bloomberg TV interview, William F. Buckley called Hillary Clinton a phenomenon. So with that, we'll move on to news to you. And this first one came in from California. Today is Election Day in California District 50, and that's the district that clown Randy Duke Cunningham, who was ripping off, taking bribes and everything, is seat having a primary. You see, Election Day in California 50, they have gone through shock, denial, and anger. Now people betrayed by Randy Duke Cunningham's corruption in the 50th Congressional District will have the opportunity for true acceptance, voting for someone to replace him. And today, the voters in Claremont, Mesa, and La Jolla, north to Carlsbad and Escondido, will go to the polls to choose from among 18 candidates who want to represent them in Congress. And many of the candidates decide to run in a special election out of outrage over Cunningham's deceit, as well as a rare opportunity to run in a district without an incumbent. On the ballot are 14 Republicans, 2 Democrats, 1 Libertarian, 1 Independent, and a partridge in a pear tree, I think, no. And also we had the United States military reports a death of 5 soldiers in Iraq. 5 American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, including 3 killed Tuesday north of Baghdad, the U.S. military said. The U.S. statement said the 3 members of the multinational division Baghdad, that's a new division, huh? Died Tuesday afternoon in a roadside bombing, but did not give a precise location. Another soldier assigned to the 228th Brigade Combat Team died Monday of wounds suffered in the day before. So that brings up to 2,359 members of the U.S. military have died since the beginning of the war in 2003, according to the Associated Press. That figure includes seven military civilians as well. They keep building up. And this also is from yesterday, from Monday. Phone jamming records point to the White House. Key figures in a prominent phone jamming scheme designed to keep New Hampshire Democrats from voting in the 2002 had regular contact with the White House and Republican Party as the plan unfolded. Phone records introduced in criminal court show. Wow. Is this a story from 1974 with Nixon? Oh, no, this is about the current with the Bush administration. The records show that Bush campaign operatives James Tobin, who recently was convicted in the case, made 2,000 calls to the White House within a three-day period around Election Day 2002 as a phone jamming operation was finalized, carried out, and then abruptly shut down. The National Republican Party, which paid millions in legal fees to defend Tobin, said the contacts involved routine election business. The Justice Department has secured three convictions in the case, but hasn't accused any White House or National Republican officials of wrongdoing. Because they do nothing wrong. Nor made any allegations suggesting party officials outside New Hampshire were involved. The records of calls to the White House are exhibits in Tobin's trial, but prosecutors did not make them part of their case. I don't know why that is, but I thought that was very interesting. And it goes on, it says, the phone records show that most of the calls to the White House were from Tobin, who became President Bush's presidential campaign chairman for the New England region in 2004. Other calls from New Hampshire's senatorial campaign offices to the White House could have been made by a number of people. So, I don't know. It's crazy. This stuff keeps going on, you know? Just do whatever the hell they want. Nobody's going to stop them. This is from today, Riyadh.
Democrats piss me off.
There you go. Oh, no, Republicans, you got the wrong one there. What is this? We got a Republican spy in the Centurion. It's actually a Republican. Anyway, Riyadh seeks Russian help to prevent U.S. strike on Iran. This is from today, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, fearing that U.S. military action against Iran would wreak further havoc in the region. They have asked Russia to block any bid by Washington to secure U.N. cover for an attack, a Russian diplomat said on Tuesday. During a visit to Moscow last week, the head of the Saudi National Security Council urged Russia to strive to prevent the adoption of a U.N. Security Council resolution, which the United States could use as a justification to launch a military assault to knock out Iran's nuclear facilities, or nuclear, huh? Prince Bandar bin Sultan, a former longtime ambassador to the United States who was often tasked with delicate missions, met with Russian foreign blah, blah, blah. So they're worried about the recent reports in U.S. media has raised the possibility that the administration of King George was considering U.S. airstrikes against Iran's nuclear sites. So, but I understand, I was watching that Seymour Hersh came out with an article in Sunday's New Yorker magazine about the United States, the military is trying to ratchet up a plan to attack Iran, and it would include dropping these nuclear missiles on Iran. But supposedly, we don't have the weaponry to get as deep as these nuclear facilities are held, so it'd be something we don't have in our arsenal to go deeper into the ground to blow these things up. So, but there we go. There goes our attack on Iran. Uh-oh. You're going to need a few. What they said would be is like 400. It would take 400 nuclear missiles to wipe out the Iranian nuclear program. So, wow. That's amazing. I hope he doesn't go through with this. I mean, we got enough problems with it. How many more wars can we put up with? I'm saying, while we're at it, we might as well fire some missiles at up and down the coast of Africa and blast North Korea. You know. And while we're at the hell, might as well blast Afghanistan and Pakistan again because Afghanistan's sliding backwards. So, and Barbara Boxer's right. You know, we need this split government because you need some. It's the NSA tapping into President Bush. We need the split government. We need at least one branch of the government to check the administration. You can't have the Republicans running the House, the Senate, and the White House, and the Supreme Court. You need at least the House to be the Democrats so they can say, hey, you can't get away with this, and slap them down because it's, like I said, they're drunk with power. But anyway, this is from from Friday. How did I jump away to Friday? But oh well.
Alcohol is bad.
Absolutely. And this is from Friday from Indianapolis. Man, 21, charged with having sex with 13-year-old girl. Police arrested an Indianapolis man accused of having sex with a 13-year-old girl. Daniel Scott.
Holy
yeah.
Hell.
Daniel Scott, 21, faces six Class B felony counts of child molestation. Ugh. And it keeps going. Actually, you know what? The follow-up from last week.
Get your cock up her ass, you mother.
I did see a follow-up to our story we had with Justin from the MyCrimeSpace.com. NBC Dateline seemed to follow my lead here. They ran a whole story about the crimes linked to MySpace. And now I see today where MySpace has put up alerts or messages up on their website about the sexual predators or something like that. They put something notice up that be cautious when you're on their sites. So that was amazing. So, and what else we had? Friday, we had a triple suicide bombing kills 79 in Baghdad mosque attack.
Son of a bitch!
There you go. Three suicide bombers, two of them disguised as women, killed at least 79 people and wounded 164 as worshippers left a popular Baghdad Shiite mosque after weekly Friday prayers. The blasts marked the second major attack in Iraq's majority community in as many days and took place outside of northern Baghdad's Baratha Mosque. The mosque's imam, or prayer leader, Sheikh Jalaluddin al-Shagir. God, where did he come up with these names? Yeah, is an MP with the Shiite United Iraqi Alliance, the largest bloc in the Iraqi parliament. Immediately after the attack, the Iraqi authorities appealed on statewide TV for blood donations. The channel announced 79 people were killed and another 164 wounded in the blasts. At least two of the bombers addressed as women, blah, 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 blew herself up at the entrance of the mosque as worshippers were stepping out. They left behind a sea of blood. Lovely, lovely, lovely. That's what we're leaving for the Iraqi people to deal with. It's from Saturday. Officials admit Iraq is in a state of civil war. A senior official in the Iraqi government that has for the first time said Iraq is in a state of civil war. The Deputy Interior Minister Hassan al-Kamal was speaking a day after suicide bombers killed at least 70 people at that mosque. A further 160 were injured. So they're pretty much admitting finally that they're in the middle of a civil war. Finally, finally. And that civil war we went through, we don't have Abraham Lincoln running around and the other ones, This is a different civil war in the Middle East. This is an Iraqi civil war. So we'll know a civil war when we see it. Oh, really? We've only seen one in our lifetimes. Well, not in our lifetimes, but in the country's lifetimes. And this also from Sunday, gas prices jumped nearly 17 cents in the United States. I think it jumped like more like 50 cents here in Vegas. This is ridiculous. It's like $2.79 out by me.
Holy cow!
It's crazy. The economy, they're preaching all the Bush and them are saying the economy's doing well and blah, 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 blah. Well, it's doing well for the rich, but the middle class is getting screwed because these gas prices keep going up,
Blow it out your
ass. This is ridiculous, the Nevada Power is raising their rates again. You got the what the hell else? The other company, the gas is going up. The natural gas is raising their fees. This economy's going well for the rich, but the rest of us are getting squeezed. So anyway, new retail gas prices across the country soared. There you go. And soared an average of nearly 17 cents in the last 2 weeks, according to the survey released Sunday. The weighted average for all three grades increased to $2.69 a gallon by Friday. Self-service regular averaged $2.67 a gallon. Mid-grade cost $2.76 a gallon, while premium hit $2.86 a gallon.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Does that suck?
The lowest price in the country for regular unleaded gas was in Salt Lake City at $2.28 a gallon. Explain that to me. Why is it different? The most expensive was in Honolulu, where drivers pay $2.88 a gallon. So... I don't know. It's crazy. Well, I know here in Nevada, we have like a 23 cent gas tax that the state piles on to the gas fee. And I think the government, the federal tax, I think is like 18 cents. So that's, what is that? 41 cents right there for the state of Nevada and the feds getting it. So, let's see. And I also had this poll from, where is that? From today, actually. I don't know how this got mixed up. I don't know. Who's printing my stuff up? I'm the killer when I get talked to my... Actually, my sister helps me slap this together, so she must have did the stuff anyway, just any way the hell she pleased. Poll finds Bush job rating at new low, an election year blow to the GOP. The latest Washington Post ABC News poll found that 38% of the public approve of the job Bush is doing, down Wow, there's the GOP down 3 percentage points in the past month and his worst showing in the post-ABC polling since became president. 60% disapprove of his performance. With less than 7 months remaining for the midterm elections, Bush's political troubles already appear to be casting a long shadow over Congress. Barely a third of registered voters, 35%, approve of the way the Republican-led Congress is doing its job, the lowest rating in support in 9 years. A majority of registered voters, 55%, say they plan to vote for the Democratic candidate in their House district, while 40% support the Republican, blah, blah, blah. By 49-42, Americans trust Democrats more than Republicans to do a better job of handling Iraq, and they can't do any worse. I don't know. Maybe they can. I don't know. I think twice about that one. I don't know. I hope they can do better than Bush. Democrats will hold a 6 percentage point advantage over the GOP as the party most trusted to handle the economy.
Their Democrats piss me off.
Republicans. There we go. The lead swells to double digits as such issues as immigration, 12 percentage points higher, prescription drug benefits for the elderly, 28-point lead, health care, 32 points, and dealing with corruption in Washington, 25 points. The public divides evenly among one issue, terrorism, with 46% expressing more confidence in the Democrats and 45% trusting Republicans on the top voting concern. So, and also else, the perhaps the more ominous for the president, 47% in the latest poll say strongly disapprove of Bush's handling of the presidency. In comparison, the percentage also strongly disapproved of President Clinton on that measure never exceeded 33% in the post-ABC News polls. So, wow, that's interesting. So he's performing worse than Clinton was during the whole Pantygate or Zippergate. Still, more than 4 in 10 Americans, 45%, favor censuring or formerly reprimanding Bush for authorizing wiretaps of telephone calls and emails of terrorism suspects without court permission. I think they should line them up on the strip here in Las Vegas, and the American people should get a whip and be able to, or a cane and be able to whack him one time as he walks down the strip here. You know, that's I think anyway, but that'll never happen. You want Kane Bush? That'd be an attraction. You gotta charge $10 a person. You gotta get one whack at Bush's ass with a cane. Why not? 5 years later, a dog comes home. We were talking about one bitch. It's a son of a Bush. I'll call him. And now we got this other one. Is a dog comes home after 5 years. Can you believe this? A couple says that they are thrilled to have their dog back nearly 5 years after it disappeared. Holly and Troy Webb said they thought the worst when Gidget. I mean, that's why the dog ran away. They gave it a dumb name like Gidget. Gidget, their Lasso Opso, ran away in 2004. We thought maybe there's Lopso. There's a Gidget. We thought maybe she got hurt or something, but nobody called or anything like that. Holly Webb told the news in South Bend, Indiana. But the South Bend Animal Control Officers called the Webbs last week saying they'd found the dog still wearing the collar and tag she had on when she disappeared. Oh, where the hell is that dog at? The dog was found tied to the Animal Control's front door, the Webbs were told. Where has dog been for this year or 4 years? Gidget missing for 4 years and 7 months, now is 12 or 13 years old. She came home with matted fur and moves a bit slower, but otherwise all right. Huh, I wonder what happened. Where has that dog been for the year? You know, on a trip or something? Yeah. And also from Friday, we have cost to remove 12 million immigrants is a huge price. As Congress debates immigration reforms, some experts say the most extreme proposal, deporting millions of illegal immigrants, would be a huge legal and logistic morass. Isn't that the guy in the White
House?
Could we get rid of all the Mexicans? And ruinously...
Could we get rid of all the Mexicans?
I don't know. It'd be hard to do.
Could we get rid of all the Mexicans?
I don't think so. Not here in Vegas.
We get rid of all the Mexicans?
Yeah, because if they did that, these hotels would be paralyzed. And ruinously expensive, too. Officials at the at ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement Agency, which are responsible for deportations, they have no projections. But the Center for American Progress, a think tank in Washington, has put the cost at $215 billion to remove the 12 million illegal immigrants.
Could we get rid of all the Mexicans?
The state assumed a crackdown would prompt a quarter of the nation's illegal immigrants to leave voluntarily, leaving 9 million men, women, and children to deport. Finding and catching people would be the most expensive part, about $158 billion. Wow. And the study calculated it would cost an additional $34 billion to detain them, $3 billion for extra beds, $11 billion for legal processing, and $9 billion to put them on buses or airplanes. It's ludicrous, isn't it? As I said, we can't. It's half their fault they came here illegally. It's half our fault because our damn politicians didn't do anything about that damn border. You know, I say we can't go around yanking them out of their houses and throwing them out. Make them legal. You know, fix the border first, you make them legal, and then if they come in legally, then you send them back over. Like I said last week, build a damn moat between us and Mexico, a 500-foot-wide moat with the water. It may throw a couple of sharks in there or something. I don't know. Got to do something to slow it down. But, I mean, you can't blame them. You know, I mean, they all want to come here and then, you know, to seek a better life and all that. And it's half our fault we let the politicians get away with this all these years, not fixing those damn borders. So, and then we got to worry about the economic situation in Mexico. You know, if things were more appealing in Mexico, they wouldn't want to come to the United States. So that's part of the thing issue as well. You got to have a multi-pronged attack of this. You know, fix the borders and legalize the ones that are here. You're not going to spend, and our government can barely, didn't do squat in Katrina. You can't count on to handle this, throwing 12 million people out of the country the right way either. You know, and then remember Ilian Gonzalez? Hello. You know, fix the borders first, legalize them, and then get attention on to the economic situation in Mexico. That's what it's going to have to be. Where else? School suspends aide accused of slapping students. This is from Martinsville, Indiana. A teacher's aide has been suspended over an allegation that she recently slapped a Martinsville High School freshman. Police and the school's principal said the aide, Renee Bissell Cole, gave a backhanded slap to Kendra Stratton. Backhanded slap, wow. At the school while trying to break up an argument between Stratton and a group of other girls. So, boy, she must have been on a warpath there to backhand slap her. You know, I remember once when I was in school, I got cracked. I got cracked by over the head with the books that this. But the damn with the school teacher, what the hell was her name? Okay, Mrs. Fawcett. I was talking. I don't know what the hell it was. She got up, cracked me over the top of the books. What the hell? So you know what? I went home, and I told my mother, and she came in and raised hell with the school. You know, teachers can't snap like that and crack these teachers over the head or students over the head. It's also from Friday. Kerry criticizes Bush. Democratic Senator John Kerry, I hope he doesn't run. Please, please. My lips to God's ears. Please. We don't want Kerry to run again in 08. Please. Democratic Senator John Kerry, a potential 2008 candidate, lashed out at former rival George W. Bush and his advisors on Friday, calling them incompetent and labeling the White House team the Katrina administration. These guys are the most incompetent people I've ever seen in Washington and all the time I've been in public life, Kerry said via teleconference to the Washington National Action Network, which is Al Sharpton's group. Kerry criticized a House bill that would punish those who aid illegal immigrants and argued that the GOP had adopted a hardline issue to depress voter turnout. This is playing right into the Democrats' hands. I don't care what they're talking about. You know, let them tear each other apart. You know, but common sense has got to prevail. I mean, they had this damn thing, this bill settled.
Democrats piss me off.
You gotta get a new one there. with the Senate, and that thing fell apart, you know. So, and then they go away for 2 weeks on a break. I mean, and they just came back from a 2 week break after St. Patrick's Day, you know. I don't know. And this is from an op ed from the Bangor Maine News from Duncan E. Beaton. Conniving, greeting, lying, and deceitful. Oh, we guess who he's talking about. I have been a registered Democrat, a Republican, excuse me. A registered Republican since the early 50s, as has my wife, Dot. In fact, our dedication to the GOP was such that we used to ride our horses around our Buckingham Township, Pennsylvania neighborhood with the Republican candidates' bumper stickers on their backsides. Now we never considered the implication that we found, but we found out later that one of those candidates was a real horse's ass. If we had horses today, that's right where we'd stick George Bush's bumper sticker on our horses' asses.
He's doing something to his ass.
I love it.
He's not kicking his nothing ass, but he's definitely doing something to his ass.
No, they're nothing better than a bitter George Bush supporter. That's why I love it. They built the case for war by giving us in Congress false information about Iraq's stockpile. We all know about that.
Holy cow!
All lies with no foundation, in fact. And so for illegitimate reasons, we invaded the sovereign nation of Iraq, which is not threatening us. 3 years later, we have no reason being there. We have lost 2,400 troops. Thousands have been maimed for life. 40,000 to 60,000 Iraqis have been killed. and probably 100,000 wounded and maimed as well. Oh, that's a nice cherry picture. The time has come, long overdue, for our two senators in Maine to disavow this deceitful and conniving president and lead the Congress and to force him to retreat.
I have to deny your request.
And he blasts him over the fiscal matters from 2001 through 2008. Bush will increase the national debt by $3.9 trillion. To a total of $9.689 trillion by 2008, according to the OMB. That's an average annual deficit of $489 billion and a 72% increase in the national debt. Yet he has the gall to cut many domestic programs, including Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Half more in this debt increase has or will go toward financing this stupid Iraq war. Praise the Lord! I like that. So I think Justin Dunkelvent from Dunkelvent's on? No. Maybe not. A train wreck. There we go. Justin? Hello. Here he comes. And Justin from the Dunk Event. Are you there, sir?
I hope.
Ah, yes. You are live and in living color. How are you doing?
I am good. How are you doing?
We haven't heard from you in a while. We like hearing the sound effects there.
I know. How about that?
Did you pick up on that op-ed from the Bangor Daily News? This GOP voter really let Bush have it.
Wow. No, I didn't. I heard it, and I mean, I don't think it's particularly surprising. I mean, You have a president which, for all intents and purposes, in every single poll that I see, is polling below 40.
Yeah.
In the high 30s, and you're going to get a lot of people who voted for him being extremely angry when you're pulling in 37%.
Yeah. I mean, he keeps getting lower and lower, and every week it's something else that crops up. I mean, this week now is the whole he okayed for the whole Scooter Libby deal to come out.
Well, and that's I mean, this might really kill his presidency, like. Seriously kill it. Kill his credibility for people who maybe were still saying, well, I trust the guy, you know. Because it's not necessarily about the whole idea of declassification. I think that's something that's kind of getting glossed over. The declassification is not the thing, right?
Because
A president can declassify whatever he deems fit. The point is that, A, he declassified it to counteract a New York Times op-ed piece, number one. Number two, he very... publicly said that he would basically hold anybody accountable for this whole leaking thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it came from him. And so people are gonna see that clip, they're gonna see this latest thing, and they're just gonna be like, you know what, this guy's lying to us.
Oh, he's been lying since he got in. What are you talking about? He's been lying since he was elected.
Well, I mean, but serious, just outright lies. This is similar to, like, I did not have sexual relations with that woman,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Clinton lied. And, you know, and with Bush basically, you know, like, if I found out who the leaker is, he's not going to have a place in this presidency, well, or in this administration.
Yeah,
well,
where was the mirror in the White House?
Is he going to fire himself, you know?
Exactly. Well, and then, I had the quotes here that the Dems called for Bush to come clean. They cite eight denials. King George in September of 2003. I don't know of anybody in my administration who leaked classified information. If somebody did leak classified information, I'd like to know, and we'll take the appropriate action. And then he said that same day, further on, if there is a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is, and if the person has a vital law, the person will be taken care of. Wow. What's he going to do to himself, huh?
I think he's going to just, slam his hand in a book, and that'll be it. You know, that'll be punishment enough. You shouldn't have done that, George.
No, like I said, he should be subjected to a caning by running down the streets in a strip in Las Vegas with his pants down, and people should spend like $10 with it to get a cane and be able to whack him once, you know?
Jesus.
You know what I'm saying? Well, yeah. Yeah, it's getting, if he's getting that ridiculous with his explanations, why not, you know?
Well, I can give you... I can probably, like, you know, list a ton of reasons right off the bat, but I think the question is more of a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, here's the thing. Like, you know, we still don't really have a good plan for Iraq.
No.
There are a lot of people coming out and saying we just need to get out of there. There was somebody on the on Donkelfont today that said like Rumsfeld wanted to just leave like right after the invasion, and I don't remember that, but that would have been like, you know, incredibly irresponsible. I've told you this before. I think that we need to. I think that we, you know, once we're in there, we kind of broke it, and now we need to make sure that we can like we can give the Iraqis the type of freedom that they deserve. It doesn't look like it's just because there's been such poor planning and such poor management of this this post-war stuff. It's just it seems like it might end up just being a lost cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're going to have to go through, you know, whatever the Iraqis are going to have to go through, whatever the Iraqis have to go through, and that might mean civil war, and it might mean splitting Iraq into three separate parts, you know, three different countries. I don't know. I really don't. It's a really, 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 it's a really, really difficult time over there, and you can't just blame the media for not, you know, reporting the good news, right? I mean, there's a bunch of things happening over there, and a bunch of different people who are saying, you know what, if this isn't a civil war, then I don't know what is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and get back to these poll numbers. I mean, they keep getting worse. Where's this one? USA Today had him down to, where are we at here? He's disapproval 60%. And he's even lower than Clinton was during the middle of the Zippergate. You know?
Well, I don't even remember if, like, Clinton's poll numbers were that low, were they?
No, he got down. I just had it now. He got down to like 30. I thought it was he got like 38%. I can't. I had it now. Of course, I shuffled it away.
But after the impeachment, he like so during that he was 38%.
Mm-hmm.
When he was being impeached, I thought it went back up to like 60.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, here we go.
There's something like that.
Yeah, here we go. I have it. In the latest poll, said 47% in the latest poll said they strongly disapprove of Bush's handling of the presidency. In comparison, the percentage who strongly disapproved of President Clinton on that measure never exceeded 33%. So, yeah, Bush is even lower than Clinton. So he's 14.
He's much lower in disapproval. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, people might not have approved of what Clinton did with his personal life, but they, you know, we were rolling along in the 90s. I mean, like, that was.
Absolutely.
You know, it was a time of, you know, pretty good peace and prosperity.
Yeah,
so.
Running surpluses and the debt was coming down, and you know, it's amazing how he's squandered everything. You know, if anything, I think they should censure him for squandering the national treasury. You know.
Yeah, I mean, censure is a really interesting thing. I think it's going to be like, you know, essentially it's an empty thing. I think that, you know, the Democrats could push it, but you know, if they don't. They need, if they're going to censure him, they have to wait till after the fall.
Oh yeah,
right?
Oh yeah,
and see what happens there. And you know, I mean, Russ Feingold is definitely putting himself in a position for the you know, for the very liberal wing of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
to kind of, you know, be the new Howard Dean, I think. And I think that's what he's doing with the censure motion. And you know, and that's fine. That's fine. I just think that realistically, it's not going to happen until after, you know,
mm-hmm.
the fall election.
Oh yeah,
if at all. I mean, if there's a major flop back to, or there's a major flip back to, I should say flip back to more of a democratically controlled Senate, and possibly more of a balanced Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Then you might be able to see something like that. Go through and to be honest with you, it's borderline. I mean, it's becoming borderline incompetent. He's not getting rid of Rumsfeld.
No,
you know, and I mean, and there's so many people are just saying Rumsfeld just needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just been so bullheaded with this, and he was wrong on so many different things.
Yeah,
and
well he's the one that's pounding the drums for Iran too. Him and Cheney.
Oh yeah, they're pounding the drums for Iran as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and listen, personally, I don't want Iran to get nuclear weapons, but I don't trust this administration to handle this Iran problem.
No.
You know, and they have just shown time and time and time again that they just do not have the. They have some ideas, right? But they don't have the follow through.
Yeah.
And the follow through is what's important. You know, with especially when you're talking about, you know, invasion, and especially when you're talking about, you know, regime change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Christ's sakes, like, it's, you know, to hear this thing on the blog today, and I would like to get some proof of that if that's what Rumsfeld thought, that he just wanted to leave Iraq 30 days after, like, we we had said, or after, you know, the whole mission accomplished thing, I just, like, I heard that. I'm like, are you kidding me? No. You know, that just shows he's even more incompetent.
Yeah, not too surprising. So, yeah. And also, actually, in the chat room, Darth Marley saying it about Bush and the censure that's also squandering the national treasury on Medicare Part D. Yeah, that whole drug thing, that's a fiasco,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, the drug thing that was supposed to cost $300 billion, yeah, and costing $700 billion.
Yeah, that's a debacle, well, right there.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of GOP... See, people on both sides of the aisle are pissed about that because, you know, obviously Democrats, you know, they want seniors to get prescription drugs. But the way that the bill was put forward, it didn't use the government's buying power. Like, I mean, you were talking about, you know, the most powerful... It could be the most powerful force in lowering the cost of prescription drugs, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't use our buying power in order to drive down drug prices.
No.
You know? And then they said, oh, it was going to cost $300 billion, I believe. It's $332 billion, I think. I mean, I could be off $100 billion or so, but, you know, when we're talking about huge numbers like this.
Yeah.
And then... A lot of the GOPers, they said, okay, listen, we're gonna vote for this, but you promised it's $332 billion or so. Yeah. And then 3 or 4 months later, it's like, oh, well, wait a second, it's gonna be $700 billion.
Yeah, surprise.
So a lot of, go ahead.
Oh no, it's the same thing. It's a surprise, like they said with the war in Iraq. Oh, they're gonna come in, they're gonna throw roses at our feet, you're gonna cook dinner for the troops and blah 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 blah. You know, the same BS they fed us with the Iraq, they fed us with this Medicare business. You know.
Well, here's the thing with this administration. I don't trust them to give me the full story.
Absolutely.
I trust them to cherry pick the facts that will support their side of it, and then to not give me the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to do A and they don't want to do B, right? And I see that as completely intellectually dishonest, and I don't think that we can have the type of leadership in Washington that is intellectually dishonest like that.
No.
You know, because what happens when you're intellectually dishonest? You're not only intellectually dishonest with the American people, you're also being intellectually dishonest with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're lucky, your plan works, right?
Yeah.
But I would say when you ignore the other side and you cherry pick intelligence or you cherry pick certain types of things and you just look at, you know, these things that support your argument. I mean, that's against, like, the basic scientific method. I mean, you just don't do it. You know, you make sure that, like, you know, your argument is going to be sound, you know, given everything that has been said.
Yeah,
and I don't trust that that's what their policy is.
Exactly.
And so when that happens, it's like, I would say, like, you know, probably, like, you know, 7 or 8 times out of 10, you're going to get bit in the ass.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what's been happening. That's what's happening with this administration. The chickens are coming home to roost, and, like, and that's why Bush's credibility is in the toilet. It's not just because of the media; it's because of their own actions.
Yeah. Well, and then plus in this day and age, we got the bloggers are all looking, you know, digging and looking for stuff. You know, the media is going, and you know, I got all these 24-hour news channels. They're all looking, you know, and then if they screw up and don't come clean, somebody's going to find out. It's going to make them look like look bad. You know.
Well, there's plenty. Here's the thing: there's plenty to find.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if the media is fishing in a pond that doesn't have any fish, they're not going to be able to pull anything out of it, right? I mean, if Bush hadn't okayed the declassification of that information and then stated publicly that said, you know, I'm going to go after this X, Y, and B person, if he had at that point just said, you know what, here's what happened. I declassified the information because I wanted to counter the New York Times op-ed piece,
yeah.
Okay? I declassified this national intelligence estimation because of this stuff that Joe Wilson said, okay? And if he would have come out at that point and said, that's why I did it, because I felt that this information was false, it was misleading, X, Y, Z, right?
Yeah.
I think the American people would have been okay with that,
yeah.
Right? But he didn't do that. What he did instead was he, you know, he obfuscated, he, you know, he covered it up, and he, you know, he said these really strong things that are now coming, are now rather ironic, because it means like, oh, what, so you're going to fire yourself, right? And
yeah.
It's very
dishonest.
Well, it's very intellectually dishonest. It looks like he's lying.
Yeah.
It looks like he's covering up, you know. And in fact, he is covering up.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, he did lie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, is that worthy of censure? Possibly, you know.
Yeah.
But I think more than any type of action that Congress can take, you know, it's like, I don't think the impeachment, none of that, just, you know, let the polls and let the, you know, let the disintegration of the Republican Party speak, you know, to how people don't have confidence in Bush anymore.
Mm.
And let that speak to it. And listen, democracy is a fantastic, you know, form of government. You know, Churchill actually said it's the worst form of government except for all the other ones.
Mm.
But it's fantastic in the way that it's a self-correcting system, right?
Yeah.
And so when people like Bush do the things that people like Bush do, and, you know, are intellectually dishonest like this, usually, eventually, it's self-correcting and you know, the electorate starts to swing back over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well,
what's that?
They're looking bad with November coming around the corner. They're looking
really bad. Yeah,
looking horrible. Well, and another thing, I don't know if you saw this month, this phone jamming business that the records about some congressional election in New Hampshire that apparently the Republican GOP was jamming the phone lines so the Democrats going to get their voters out. Anyway, somehow this is getting linked back to the White House now. This phone jamming business.
Yeah, so, I saw a little bit about that. I'm just like, you know, I'm. Honestly, you know, that the whole dirty politics tech,
yeah.
You never know, like, you know, who was behind that. And I don't even want to speculate because that happens in every race. And by the way, there is a fantastic, you have got to get this DVD.
Oh, really?
Sean. It's called Street Fight.
Street Fight, okay.
Yeah, and people who aren't even interested in politics, you should get this DVD. It's about this, the New Jersey mayoral race.
Hmm.
Between the incumbent who had been around for like 20, 25 years, and this new guy, and it's a Democrat against Democrat.
Oh,
yeah. And so when I say dirty tricks, you know, you're saying, you know, you're talking about the Republicans. This is Democrat against Democrat, and this guy who's challenging the incumbent, his name's Cory Booker, and is extremely intelligent. I mean, across the board, it's just like fascinated by like how intelligent, how well spoken this guy was, how he really dug into like the fact that there was a fair amount of corruption in, you know, New Jersey, in Newark,
mm-hmm.
right, in New Jersey mayor's office, and he wanted to change that. And the incumbent, like, I mean, both candidates were black. The incumbent called Cory Booker white because he was kind of light skinned.
Really?
You know, like all this stuff, it's crazy. and this is, you know, and this is Democrat against Democrat. So this happened, that happened, that stuff happens across the board. But yeah, if you look it up on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
I believe you can buy it on Amazon. And I'm that's probably a DVD I'm going to watch multiple times.
Really?
It's that good.
Well,
it's a fantastic documentary. So.
Well, it kind of harkens back to me from when I lived in Chicago. Yeah. You know, with the Democrats used to fight like cats and dogs in Chicago too. You know,
oh yeah.
Especially with
absolutely.
Mayor Byrne.
You know, people want to hold on to power. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they'll do anything that they can to hold on to power.
Yeah. Actually, Darth Marley in the chat room said something about about Clinton and, you know, he didn't inhale, blah, blah, blah. They always fall back to that. Oh, Clinton with the zipper gate. I mean, it's two entirely different things, you know. He did something about his personal life. This involves, you know, sending the military, 2,000 plus 2,400 troops dead, you know, and all of our $1 trillion getting plowed into Iraq. I mean, this is a lot more serious than the Clinton business, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't even compare him. The Clinton thing happened.
Yeah.
You know, he was impeached, and you know, our articles of impeachment were. I guess he was actually technically impeached, but they didn't mm-hmm. actually kick him out.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, you know, people like Darth Marley can keep on bringing up Clinton, but I just think that makes people like Darth Marley look bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like.
It's
that's what he's talking about. He's talking. He just keeps on bringing up Clinton. It's like, well, Clinton did it. It's like, well, who gives a shit if Clinton lied? That has nothing to do with the fact that this person right now is lying and hurting our credibility around the world.
Do we have any left? Do we have any credibility left?
Well, sure, he has some credibility.
Listen, really?
If the guy comes clean, well, wow. Okay. What happened when Clinton came clean?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
His approval rings went up.
People just want the truth,
yeah.
And that's what politicians are so afraid of. They're so afraid of telling the truth. All their handlers, they take these polls. Should we tell the truth? Shouldn't we tell the truth? You know?
Mm.
You know what? I really think at the end of the day, all people want is just a straight shooter. That's
yeah.
it. You
yeah.
know, they want somebody that they think can level with them. And the reason people like Bush is because they think that they could go out and have a beer with him, right? And that they would be straight with him. The reason Bush is having a popularity shift now is because you know what? Bush is that guy who's like all hat and no cattle, as they say in Texas.
Yeah.
And you'd go out and you'd have a beer with him, and he would bullshit you all night. You know?
Exactly.
And that's not, and that's, people don't like to hang out with people like that. Once they really figure out who that guy is, they don't like to hang out with that guy.
True. Well, you
so,
want
to,
I think
Bush started to come clean and said, like, hey, listen, here are the mistakes that our administration has made, and I'm getting rid of Rumsfeld. I'm kind of trying to clean my cabinet out and then bring some new people in. Mm-hmm. I think people would respect that. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're more about sticking to their guns than actually like doing what may be better for the country.
Yeah.
Stubbornness is incompetence.
Well, I think if he fires Rumsfeld, they'll restore some credibility around the world because the world hates Rumsfeld.
I think if Rumsfeld left and then Cheney replaced him.
And if he replaces Cheney, but they'll set up, if he replaces Cheney, he'll probably be with McCain because they'll set him up for him for 2008.
The thing about McCain, like, I think GOPers just hate him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that he's, like, gone against the Republican Party too much, I think that he will run. No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole primary thing, I don't know. I don't know if somebody like a Mitt Romney can come out of the woodwork and excite the imagination of the GOP, the Republican base. I don't know if he can do that coming from Massachusetts, you know, where he just had passed a bill that talked about mandatory health care. He's the governor of the only state in the union that has same-sex marriages, right?
Mm-hmm. No, they won't fly in the...
I don't think that's going to fly, but...
I think George Allen is the dark horse in all this. I think he's the anti-McCain, so if anything, I think he might just sneak in there and get the nomination, you know?
There's a possibility, yeah, but I mean, I think it's going to be somebody that we might... It's either going to be McCain or somebody that we really haven't heard a lot about.
Really?
Bill Frist, he's DOA.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't really think of anybody else right now, but I mean, I don't think Condoleezza Rice is going to run.
No.
I don't think she should run.
No.
You know? I mean, I think she's kind of tainted by this administration. I don't think that she would necessarily make a good president.
Yeah.
I think people are just really, really excited, you know, because it's like, okay, you know, we could have a black woman, you know, in the Oval Office, and that's fine. But you know what? I wish we would really stop talking about, like, whether the person is a woman, whether they're black, regardless. I don't care, right? If Barack Obama ran for office tomorrow, I would want him to be a good president.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't care if he's a black president.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, we need to get beyond this stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But 2006 is in the crosshairs right now, and I really think it's going to be an interesting time.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. What do you think about the illegal immigration business? We haven't actually talked about that at all yet. What do you think of that?
No, we haven't.
Disaster.
Here's the thing with the illegal immigration business. I think that all of this stuff, I think that all the protests and all those types of stuff, it's really going to force people's hands because they're going to be nervous about the fall 2006, right? I mean, they're going to be nervous about fall elections and their positions hurting them. I think that we need to basically stem the illegal immigration coming into the country before we can even really begin to... talk about amnesty or solving the problem. Everybody knows that if you have an amnesty program and that you allow people to who have been here, who have come into this country illegally, people are just going to keep streaming in, you know? The 700, mile fence, that could potentially have, make some dent in it. But honestly, I don't understand. It's like, so if you're talking about 700 miles, why don't you hire, another... 2,000, border agents.
It's too simple.
That's my point. It's too simple. Put one, every, like, a quarter of a mile, And, I mean, like, that idea has probably come out, and it's been dismissed for some various reasons, right?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Well,
and there's still going to be people coming through in trucks and other types of things that, other people don't know about, but I mean, if like a lot of people are actually crossing the border on foot, they can be stopped by a person, I think that we really need to stop the illegal immigration into the country before we can even start to solve that other problem. Having said that, you know, I am definitely more in favor of granting people amnesty, right? I think that they're a contribution to our economy. I think they have a major contribution to our economy, in fact. And I think that these people need access to health care. They need access to legal resources. Right now we have kind of an unofficial, it's below the poverty level. I mean, those people can apply for, Medicaid and those types of things. We essentially kind of have a new slave class.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have any rights.
True.
And yet they're propping up our economy. And I don't believe that if you were to get all of the illegal aliens out of the country that, you know, every person would, you know, be working. I just don't believe that.
No, you can't believe the
economics of that.
Yeah,
so.
How are you going to drag 12 million people out of the country? I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, especially here in Vegas, somebody's like Vegas, New York, the big cities and the hotels, they rely on the illegal immigrants to work at the hotels, you know?
Well, I mean, that's just the thing. It's like, and you have that. It's the wink and the nod, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, we know your staff isn't, you know, legal, right? I mean, it's everywhere. It's, you know, the kitchen staff, in the hotels. I mean, come on, you know, who are we kidding ourselves, right? We're just kidding ourselves if we think that these people don't have a significant contribution to our economy, and if they didn't work for less, you know, then we would be paying, you know, crazy amounts on this, on many different services. And so I think what we need to do is we need to stem the flow first. I don't really know how to do that because I don't think that, you know, it's going to, the illegal immigrants are just going to keep streaming in.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be some sort of plan to address that, you know, the 700-mile fence. Well, I think, you know, it's kind of extreme. Something to that effect could possibly stem that once we, but I think what's going to happen is there's going to be more of a guest worker program. There's going to be more of an amnesty program, and the whole idea of like protecting the border isn't really going to be addressed as much. And I think that's a mistake.
So. Yeah. So do I. Well, Justin, we'll let you go at the end of our segment.
Yeah.
All right.
Always good to be on.
Very good. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, man.
All right. Thank you very much.
Later.
Thank you. And that was Justin Gardner. There he goes. With the Donkelfin Centrist Political Blog, with our political discussion, like I said, you have to address this multi-pronged approach here. You know, you got to address the borders, okay, strengthen them up. You have to address the amnesty for these people. You can't drag 12 million people out of the country. And also, you have to address the economic situation in Mexico. I mean, you know, we're going to have to do that. If you're going to stem the tide of them coming through, you're going to have to address what's going on economically in Mexico. I mean, it makes common sense. You know, that's the source of it. And actually, it's a contributor to it because they're coming up through South America and Central America through Mexico and then over their borders into the United States. So I think it's a hemispheric issue we're going to have to deal with. So anyway, we'll take a break. And then in the second hour, we'll be joined by another Justin Reddy. And we'll be ending the second hour, it'll be Koenig Rules with a Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who news and review. He's got some spoilers which are going to rock your world. And we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And we are back for the second hour of Subject to Discussion live on LVRocks.com. Thank you for everybody for listening live, and thank you for everybody for podcasting the program. I was just talking to the Centurion Charge consoler about an incident at work. I was in the lunchroom at the hotel, and there he is. And then a coworker had his iPod. I heard him. I'm like, oh, man, it's King Hesh. So, yeah, King Hesh is Hesh on Live, but it's 2 hours of Hesh on Live. So that was incredible. Anyway, and up next will be Justin Reddy from the 2008 Political Perspective blog.
Well, that's dramatic.
Yes. There he is. And we're joined by Justin Reddy.
Hey there. How you doing?
What do you think of that patriotic music? We trotted out.
That's pretty good. I dropped out for a second. I couldn't quite hear it. I was trying to follow you there.
Well, it's wonderful. It's and we'll play it up for you. Here you go. There you go. But yes, welcome back to the program. You're on a while back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Actually, I was on a while back. Yeah.
Yes. And we're gonna have he runs the 2008 Political Perspective blog.
Right.
Correct. And
right.
What's the big news on your blog right now?
Well, actually, right now the big news is that I've been extremely busy and I've been focusing a lot on my job in the Maryland General Assembly, so I've only been updating about once every week. But it's been interesting to watch some of the movement with the different potential presidential campaigns. I mean, I think a lot of people that are in the blog world are watching, the blogosphere are watching that. I'm watching McCain try to slide to the right but continue to be a maverick, and watch Hillary try to decide if she wants to be left-wing or centrist. And it's been interesting, but, you know, one of the things that's really fun to watch this year is how the candidates that the potential presidential candidates that are up for re-election this year are going to do in their elections.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people are focusing on Hillary. I know Edwards is starting to, you know, show up a little more on TV. He was on the Situation Room last week, and he got that mole removed, so, you know, he's appealing more to the OC crowd, I think, now. I don't know, but he had that.
He's a pretty man. Now, there's no question about that. But I think his advantage is, Edwards' advantage is that and it's the same advantage that others that aren't going to be serving in an office have, is that they can spend unlimited amounts of time traveling the country, raising money, and meeting all the activists that they need to meet to try to do well in their primaries.
Yeah, and he he said he hasn't made up his mind yet, but he's keeping his site going, the One America Committee. He's focusing on poverty, you know, which it's still a big issue. So he's trying to carve out a little niche for himself. So he might be like one of the key un-Hillary candidates, huh?
I think so. I think I have a theory, and those that have read my blog, and not that I'm not exactly up there with Daily Kos and Powerline and some of the ones that get, you know, thousands of hits a day. But the people that read my blog know that I like to talk a lot about, a lot of people have assumed Hillary's the favorite and McCain's the favorite. And what's going to happen in the Democratic Party is there's going to be a fight to see who can be the anti-Hillary, but I think you're going to have people running to the right and to the left of Hillary. And I think that Edwards is going to battle guys like Russ Feingold, the senator from Wisconsin, to see who can be the guy that is the kind of the fiery populist. You won't call him left-wing in the sense that he's not, you know, almost socialist, but he's very, you could call it populist, and I think that definitely Edwards is vying for that spot. There's no question about that. I also think, though, that you'll see a contingent on the, when I say on the right, I don't mean on the right, like Republican, but on the right side of the Democratic Party, that people like Mark Warner and Evan Bayh that are trying to appeal to the centrists and say, you know, we need to nominate more of a centrist candidate. Because we've lost the last two elections to Republicans.
Yeah, because so, I'm on your blog now. You have the poll that Frank Luntz did. Yeah, pretty much Edwards Let me see. He tested none with the positives and expectations as high, and none fell farther as fast. So he slipped and slid in that focus group, huh?
Yeah, and you know that's funny. You don't always know this far out how much that stuff means. I'm of the opinion that so much of the quote unquote common knowledge or the I guess you'd say the what everybody thinks is going to happen. A lot of times it doesn't happen. You know, in 1994, everybody thought that guys like Jack Kemp and Phil Gramm were going to run for president, and they were going to give Bob Dole a real rough run, and they were going to take up against Clinton. And you know, but that didn't happen. And it happens a lot. But I do think that it's interesting to see Luntz's focus group there.
Yeah, and also you have Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico. His story is a complete package. He's an outsider with an insider's knowledge. So he might be like the dark horse. They'll come out and take the whole thing. You know, because
that's true. And I think that people honestly, I think that people are going to be looking for an anti-Hillary. Even if they like Hillary, they're going to want to have options. And I think that the problem that all these guys are going to have, though, is they've got to get support consolidated behind them. Mm-hmm. And the primary, it'll be very interesting to see how many candidates actually get in and how long they stay in. Because if you remember in 2004, one of the main reasons that after Kerry eliminated Dean from the race in the primaries, everyone kind of latched on to Edwards as the guy that could get the nomination from Kerry, but Edwards had a problem because Wesley Clark stayed in the race and took votes from him, and Kerry was able to win Tennessee and Virginia, two states that if Edwards, it had been just Edwards versus Kerry, Edwards may have had a much better chance of winning. So that same kind of problem could continue in 2008 if Hillary's kind of wins New Hampshire and wins the next big primary, mm-hmm. and then there's got these other candidates, two or three of them, that are fighting for that anti-Hillary spot, it could end up being too late and she could get the nomination.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I was a Hillary fan until the beginning of the year, and I started going, well, I mean, she's so, they love her, you hate her, she's so divisive. Her negatives are almost as high as her positives,
And that's true.
Like I said, you got to look at Edwards, you got to look at somebody that can appeal to that Southern vote, if you're going to crack through, because I don't know if you got that book, but I got a book, The Foxes in the Hen House by...
I haven't read that yet. I'm looking forward to getting a chance to read that. It looks like a good book.
Excellent, yeah. And they helped Mark Warner win his election for governor in Virginia.
Right.
And you got to be somebody from that area, either Edwards from North Carolina. He's got the specter of being a loser, though, from that, from the last campaign.
Well, and another problem that you got with guys like Edwards and even Warner, who I think they're both phenomenal politicians. But I think that, and Warner clearly did a very good job as governor.
Mm-hmm.
But their problem is one term senator, one term governor. And now at least in Warner's case, he managed a very successful business, but. And it's the same thing with Mitt Romney. People are jumping with Mitt Romney on the Republican side, the governor of Massachusetts. But, he's a one-term governor. And I'm not sure that I think a lot of centrists that want to see the Democratic Party nominate a centrist candidate are looking at guys like Warner, and they really like him.
Mm-hmm.
And they also look at Evan Bayh, someone like Evan Bayh, who's a senator from Indiana and also a former governor. But Bayh is very... very drab. He's very bland.
Yeah, he's not very charismatic. Like, you need that these days. Well, I mean,
absolutely.
Plus, the last handful of presidents we've had have all been governors, though, if you think about it, though. I mean,
That's true. And I would look, and I think the Republican primary is where it's really going to, it's also mm-hmm. going to be interesting. And I know that because the Democratic Party has been out of power, the focus for them is more on who they're going to nominate. But for the Republicans, it's also very interesting. And there's a number of the quote-unquote favorites are not governors, but I really think you're going to see a governor or two governors make a real strong push for the party's nomination. Two governors that I think Mitt Romney has impressed me more than I thought he would, but also I think Governor Huckabee from Arkansas would be someone that appeals to a lot of the conservative party base, but he's also governed very well in Arkansas. And he's been popular down there, so it's going to be really fascinating to watch on both sides and watch the maneuvering. And the year to watch is actually not 2008, but 2007 when they start mm-hmm. really seriously raising money and campaigning
exactly.
and that's when it gets fun.
Well, if you're watching, well, they start making their, slowly making their maneuvers, like this year, because the midterms, you see if,
right.
Who shows up where and with what, right. what candidate for Congress. And then seven, they'll start sticking their foot out a little bit more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and by the late, nowadays, it's by the late spring in 07, you're going to know, mostly, and now someone like McCain could wait longer because they have such name ID. Someone
exactly.
like Hillary, someone like Condi Rice could wait a lot longer to get in the race. But for most of these candidates, they have to, by the spring of 2007, basically say that they're at least exploring running because they have to get out there and get that press coverage.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, and then then you got Wesley Clark. I mean, he's out there. I mean, I really... He'd probably be more of a vice presidential candidate if Hillary gets in. I think
so too. I was never that impressed with Wes Clark. Now I'm a Republican, so I tend to not be impressed as much with the Democratic candidates. But I'm in,
we'll have to disconnect you right now. I didn't know you're Republican. I'm kidding.
No, well, I try my blog. I try not to be partisan on my blog.
Very good.
I sometimes let my color show through, but I really am interested in both sides. And I don't think Clark. I was not impressed with Clark and his presentation, but then again, he was a new candidate, so it's possible that he could polish himself up a little bit better this time.
Yeah, but he's never held elective office, you know what I mean?
Right.
That bothers me. But
and he wasn't exactly Dwight Eisenhower,
no,
if you know what I mean.
No,
so.
No. He made some blunders over there in Bosnia. He wanted to attack the airport where the Russians were based or something. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, they said they had to have an aide follow him around in Bosnia to make sure he didn't say anything dumb. So
yeah, I think
that's kind of a tough thing.
Yeah, maybe he'd make a good, vice presidential candidate with Hillary. To shore up her, male base, make sure, because the men will have, oh my God, dude, Hillary's gonna hit the button, have the nuke codes and all that. But I think if he's with her, it might calm people down.
That's true. And when I say I don't like someone like Wes Clark, and that's one thing I think that it's important for us as we, for people that are involved in the blogosphere and involved in political, sort of amateur political punditry or professional political punditry. I don't think he's a bad guy. I just don't think he's gonna appeal to people as, as a presidential candidate.
Yeah. Now, what about some of these congressional races? We're kind of wandering off our point here. But now, did you hear any results from the California, from the, district, Randall Cunningham's district?
Duke Cunningham. You know something? I feel rather ridiculous. I knew it was going on today, but I haven't checked the results yet.
No, I don't have anything here. I know that the election was up, and there's... Two Republican, oh no, 14, I forget what it is.
There's a bunch of Republicans
and like
in
two Democrats running.
And Busby's the one everybody's getting behind, Francine Busby.
Yeah. Oh,
all Democrats were getting behind.
Really? Now,
my understanding is, just a minute, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Looking for here.
That's okay.
I have all in front of a computer. I was going to see if I could find any results. I don't see anything yet, but I understand that Daily Kos and some of the other, and MyDD and some of the other big Democratic blogs were getting behind Francine Busby. Because if they could get her 50% of the vote in this election, they could avoid a runoff and
exactly.
she could win the congressional seat.
Yeah, and then
which would be a huge upset because it's a very Republican district.
Oh yeah, well I think that everybody's just so pardon the word, pissed off at that crook for
Sure. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
I think that's a given. But and also, we also want to talk about the Maryland Senate. Because the House is up. We have all 435 seats in the House are up. Right now, the Republicans hold 231. The Democrats still hold 201. There's one independent, and two seats are vacant. And the Democrats need to win a net of 15 seats to win control of the House. I think they are going to get control of the House regardless. And then, of course, the Senate's 133 are going to be contested this year. Republicans hold 55. Democrats hold 44. One independent. And the Democrats need six to win control of the Senate. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're more likely to get the House.
Yeah, I kind of think, actually, at the beginning of this year, I know the president's numbers were down, and that's one thing I think that could obviously that will affect. If his numbers are still where they are now, that's going to be tough for the Republicans to maintain that big of a lead. I'm not sure that we'll see the Democrats take either House.
Really?
I believe that what we'll see, I'm saying if the president's numbers stay where they are, I think the Democrats may take one of the houses. But I think the one problem the Democrats have is they have to defend more seats in the Senate. And they're in the House, it's just difficult to win that many seats unless it's a landslide.
True.
Which I think we'll see just because of, I believe, in the ebb and flow of political opinion, I believe we'll see the president's number improve some.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to get up around 50. I think it might get up into the mid-40s again.
Yeah.
One of the reasons, one of the interesting things about the president is that I had assumed his numbers would get better, and they got better for a while after the Katrina aftermath, and then they got worse again. So, yeah.
Well, like you said, a lot of these districts have been, you know, gerrymandered, so they, you know, the Democrats may have a, you know, have a tougher road to hoe, as they say, you know, to overcome all that. And then you want to talk about the Maryland Senate?
Yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting race, and I'm local, so obviously that that is something I'm following closely. The Maryland Senate race is interesting because Maryland is a state that you wouldn't normally give the Republicans any chance of winning a seat in.
Yeah.
Normally, I mean, they've won the governorship, but the governorships are different than Senate races. Federal offices, if it's a very hardcore Republican or hardcore Democratic state, it's much more difficult for the other party to win a U.S. Senate race because there's just a lot of institutional advantages. But in this case, the Republicans have recruited a very good candidate. He's the lieutenant governor, Michael Steele, and he's an African American. The Democrats have actually got a pretty good group of candidates. They have Ben Cardin, who's a congressman who's represented the Baltimore metro area for 20 years, and before that was the Speaker of the State House of the State House of Delegates, the state representative. And so he's been in Maryland politics for a long time. But also Kwaisi Mfume, who is running as in the Democratic primary, former chair of the NAACP and a former congressman.
He'll never get elected, trust me.
Well, he's got a lot of baggage, but one of the things that has been pointed out is that because of the way the Democratic Party establishment in Maryland, and I've, you know, this is inside Maryland baseball, so I don't want to bore your listeners, but the way they've rallied around Ben Cardin, there hasn't been official endorsements from the state Democratic Party, but there's been a lot of the big wigs are endorsing Cardin, that there's going to be a backlash of black voters and go towards Steele, because Steele's message, he's really communicating a message of opportunity and kind of doing the humble pie about how the Republican Party really hasn't reached out to African Americans like it should have, but he's going to, and he's got a great personal story, Steele does.
Huh.
And his polling shows that if he can get everybody in the state that voted for Bush in 2004 to vote for him in 2006, he can win, because fewer people vote in the midterm elections than the presidential election.
And what about the congressional district 3? What do you say? It's a safe Democracy with a crowded primary.
Yeah, it is a crowded primary, and people assume that's the seat that Ben Cardin is vacating. And the reason I wanted to talk about that is people have I don't know how closely some of your listeners follow these races. You know, I'm into it because I do consulting as well, and I'm not consulting for this race, but I do consulting. There's a guy that's going to be running for the Republicans named Gary Applebaum, who's used to run an extensive retirement home company, and it's a healthcare providers. And so he's got a lot of Democratic friends. He's Jewish, which helps in the district. The district is a very Jewish district. But the numbers in the district used to be much more favorable to Democrats, but they actually, back in 2002, they gerrymandered part of the district to help another Democrat gain a different seat. So the district's slightly more Republican than it used to be. And with a crowded primary, they have about 6 viable candidates in the Democratic primary. Mm. And the primary in Maryland is September 12th. Mm. So if you've got a candidate with lots of money that can spend the whole summer and early fall talking positive about himself and just building his name ID, and you've got 6 Democrats that are spending all their money beating each other up trying to win the primary, there's a possibility for a real upset.
True. And you might talk to Missouri U.S. Senate race, Talent versus McCaskill. You said Talent could go from Golden Boy to out.
Yeah, as a Republican activist, and I'm relatively young, I like Jim Talent because he was a young guy that got elected. He beat Mel Carnahan's widow, who took Mel Carnahan's seat in 2000 and filled his went 2 years.
Oh.
He beat her in 2002 for the remainder of the term, and he's been kind of a darling of a lot of conservatives. But lately, he kind of did some hemming and hawing on embryonic stem cell research, several people have said, you know, they're finished with him. And as I read what he said, he actually didn't. They were attributing things to him that he really didn't say. But as is so often happens in D.C. politics, no one really gets the entire story. They kind of get the so one bad quote can kind of have a life of its own.
Exactly.
But the Democrats did a great job recruiting Claire McCaskill to run because she narrowly lost the governor's race in 2004, and she was a state auditor before, which is a statewide elected office. So the polling there has them neck and neck. I mean, different polls will say different things, but clearly they've recruited. This is the kind of seat that if the Democrats want to take the Senate, they've got to win this kind of seat where it's a state that's been trending Republican. But they've got a chance to win. They're close in the polls. They have to win seats like Missouri.
Yeah,
now, that's one you normally can't count on as a possible upset.
Yeah.
You know?
Now you're watching these elections, the congressional and the Senate. It is like the national issues trickling down to them, like Bush's negatives of Iraq. You know, is that effect direct going all the way down to the state level?
I think it does. Yeah. I think it does. There's no question. Now, if the president's mildly unpopular, it's one thing. Because, you know, if the president's got approval ratings in the mid-40s, he might be unpopular in, say, California, so yeah. California candidates can run away from him.
Mm-hmm.
But if the president's unpopular is below 50 in a large number of states, is below 50% approval, or well below it, it becomes trouble for someone, for example, like a Jim Talent, because Missouri is a place where normally you would think the President of the United States coming in could help him out.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, now I don't know what the polls say in Missouri about Bush's approval rating, but at this point, the President's approval rating is going to hurt Talent more than it would help him. Now, what Bush will do is go in and raise money for him.
Yeah.
Which is really what's probably more important than anything else.
Yeah.
But
they do these private fundraisers where he flies in and it's not open to the press and they whip him out of there. You know, he raises up a couple million bucks,
sure,
and he's gone. Now, what about the Washington State Senate race? Was it Maria Cantwell?
Versus McGavick. I put that in there because I think it's one of these races, one of the spotlight that as you're watching on election night or as people watch heading into the election, it would be very optimistic for me to say the Republicans can win this seat. But they do have a candidate named Mike McGavick who's running against Maria Cantwell. Cantwell won in 2000. She narrowly beat a longtime Republican incumbent in 2000. She beat him by, it was like Florida 2000 margins, you know what I mean, where they had recount after recount, and she won by about, I think it was like just a few thousand votes.
I remember that. It was very contested. That whole recount was contested because, I don't know, it was a big mess, huh?
Right. Well, and one of the reasons that she probably won, I mean, we don't really know because the Republican senator was an older gentleman, and he didn't feel like, I mean, he contested a little bit, but then he pretty much quickly dropped the fight.
Hmm.
But we remember, of course, what happened in the governor's race 2 years ago, where they didn't have a winner for months, and we still don't really know who won.
Huh.
But anyway, so she obviously got in by the skin of her teeth, and really for about 3 years had done almost no fundraising.
Hmm.
And she was actually still in the red. Her campaign was still very much in debt because she had loaned herself a lot of money. Now she has caught up with that, but McGavick is a pretty wealthy executive, business executive. But when what I've read about him, he's not your typical rich, you know, Republican. I think he's got a business that runs very well, and really a lot of the employees speak well of the business. And he's put some of his own money, he's raised some money, and his poll numbers, Cantwell is consistently polling beneath 50%. Now McGavick is still down by 8 to 10 points, but when a Senate candidate in a state like Washington, it's supposed to be more of a Democratic state, is polling below 50 consistently, it sets off warning bells. And I think there's still a lot of voter anger about what happened in the governor's race.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you say here in Nevada, Ensign. Oh, Ensign's a shoo-in to get reelected. I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah, he's going to get reelected.
Jack Carter doesn't stand a chance against him. And
I think part of the problem there is, depending on your party, I mean, part of the problem if you're a Democrat is that Harry Reid likes John Ensign. Ensign. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Ensign. Yeah.
Ensign, yeah. I think that's part of the problem is Reid might technically endorse his opponent, but they go back a ways. Ensign ran against him and narrowly lost, him being Reid, and didn't make a big stink about it and just conceded, and it was apparently a very relatively congenial campaign. Now, I don't know. I obviously don't live in Nevada.
Yeah.
But that's what I understand, and so Reid has been loath to go all out after Ensign.
Well, I mean, I think Ensign, if he was smart, he'd come back and run for governor, I think, and he's lay himself up for president. That's, I think.
Yeah, maybe. It's the tough thing about Nevada, and I don't want to insult, again, listeners.
It's Nevada.
The tough thing about Nevada for presidential politics is the even though it's changing a lot, it's the old gambling issue within the whole Las Vegas issue, I think, doesn't play well in certain sectors of the country. It's really hypocritical, in my opinion, but...
Yeah. Well, and then,
Ronald Reagan was going to pick Paul Waxel to be his running mate.
Yeah.
And he couldn't, be kind of, and he didn't. He was just advised against it because it was Nevada. But I like Ensign. I think he's very articulate, mm-hmm. and he seems to be a pretty good public servant.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you feel about it.
He was the vet for our dog, but I mean, I'm.
Oh, really?
The dog didn't make it, but that's one thing. I think he checked the voter registration inside.
Oh, no.
Put her out of her misery. No. But I mean, you know, he's actually done quite well. As I said, I think if he was smart, we get Gibbons going to run for governor. I think
what do you think about the governor's? I was going to put that down, but I don't know anything about that race.
Well, we can talk about that another time if you want. Gibbons is, I don't know, he's got an odd look to him. He makes you feel a little uncomfortable when you're talking to him. I don't know what it is. Like, it's an eek factor. You know what I mean? It's odd. And he's got his wife running for his old seat in Congress.
To me, that's fishy. I don't like that when that happens.
It's ridiculous. I just don't. I think Ensign, he should come back, and run for governor, and be the governor. I think. I think, and then he could, run for governor or president and be on somebody's cabinet or something. I don't know, but
sure. I think that might be a very, and then a lot of people are just happy to. I mean, the U.S. Senate's a pretty prestigious place to be.
Mm-hmm.
I used to say that if a man or woman gets in the U.S. Senate and they're there for more than two terms and they don't try to move up or move on, they're a waste of space. But I said that tongue-in-cheek, but, in all honesty, it's a pretty nice thing to be in the U.S. Senate. You're one of 100, and it's a pretty prestigious place. But I think someone like Ensign definitely would be, in the future, would be a cabinet person or a governor, certainly a governor candidate or a cabinet candidate.
Oh, sure. I mean, you got the Berkeley's up for re-election. She's got really nobody running against her. Who's our one? John Porter. Some of these seats are just—it's amazing how nobody wants to run. I think everybody's so turned off with politics, huh? That you can't find candidates.
Yeah, and I think there's been a push. A lot of Democrats have pushed to try to get people to file for seats, even that aren't competitive, because they feel like if they can get the GOP to spend money on safe seats, then they can. That's less money they have to spend on contested seats, and that's a strategy the GOP employed when they were in the minority as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I'm in my mid-20s, and I'm looking forward to possibly running for office at some point myself, and I would be willing to take a chance on a long shot. It's just, I think a lot of people kind of expect it's going to be different. That when they actually get into running for office, it's a lot different than they think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And they find out it's not really a big ego boost, and it's not. It can be fun if you go into it with the right perspective, but sometimes it's tough because it's tough running for office.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen how rough and tumble they get. It's good you're aiming for that. I hope it works out. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know. So many people seem to get chewed up running for office and stuff.
They do. I think it's how you go into office and why. I think you have to know why you're running. And if you're just running to get into office because you think you can be important. I do political consulting, and at times I've had interviews with people and talked to people, my partner and I have, that they don't really know why they want to run. They just got, they're millionaires or they're real rich, or maybe they just, feel real passionately about one issue, but they don't really have a vision or an understanding of what it takes to really run for office and win.
Yeah.
And they don't have the discipline to do it, and then others do. But it's a tough thing to get. I think people, it's tempting for people to sit back and be cynical and say, this person's just running for office because they want to get into power. Sometimes that's true, but I think a lot of times people really genuinely care.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think what happens is, especially in D.C., people do get corrupted at times.
Exactly. Well, I remember when Kennedy was running against Carter, they sat him down and asked him, Senator Kennedy, why do you want to be president? And he couldn't answer the question.
Yeah, that was very famous. I remember I've read a lot about that race, and it was so funny because Kennedy was mad at Roger Mudd after that interview, and Mudd thought he was giving him a softball. I mean, what better question to ask a presidential candidate? What a softball question, Well, why do you want to be president? That should be an easy answer.
Yeah.
But sometimes people don't think about the easy answers.
No. Well, yeah. Justin, we'll let you go at the end of our segment here with you.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on.
No problem. We'll have to bring you back. We'll talk about the governor's races the next time around.
Absolutely,
okay?
It'd be great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
There you go. That was Justin Reddy. There's that nice patriotic music we're playing. I couldn't find the NBC decision music, and then I thought, "Well, this, where's the oh, where the fiddler really played the fiddler really plays Centurion, the fiddler." That's all right. And in just a minute or a moment or so, we'll be joined by Mr. Koenig Rules with our Battlestar Galactica sci-fi Doctor Who update and review and everything. He's got some spoilers that will blow us away. So before he comes on, we'll talk about the Ultimate Fighter ratings. They scored the highest ratings in Spike TV's history. Ultimate Fighter, the highest rated original series premiere in the history of the cable network. The Ultimate Fire, and actually the typo from Yahoo, it says Firefighter. So I guess they're going to have an Ultimate Firefighter show. Ranked first in its time period in households and total viewers is 2.4 million. Adults 18 to 49, 1.79 million. And men, so that's going great guns, Ultimate Fighter. Unbelievable. And then 24 is going to be around for a while. Kiefer Sutherland has inked a production deal with 20th Century Fox worth a reported $30 million. It'll include three more seasons of 24 and a two-year development deal for a soon-to-be-launched production banner. Why are these all these stars? They go on these shows, they all start their own production companies. Amazing. And then also I had this, the Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends takes up residence in Burger King. Characters from the Cartoon Network's addictive Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and the quote says, watch it, you'll know what I mean, will be featured in a promotional campaign at participating Burger King restaurants from late April through mid-May. And also today we had child welfare visits Britney Spears' home. Uh-oh. Child welfare officials and a sheriff's deputy visit the home of Britney Spears but declined to stay Tuesday where they're investigating the pop princess. Wow. And then Muhammad Ali has sold his marketing rights to his name for $50 million. 64-year-old former heavyweight champion. He sold to a company called GOAT LLC, which means the greatest of all time. So he sold his $50 million. It's the same company that runs, it controls the Elvis Presley and the Graceland and all that stuff, and also the Idol, American Idol garbage. And CBS lays claim to Dynasty Reunion. This Dynasty Reunion special is going to air in May, and it was an ABC soap. CBS is going to air the Dynasty Reunion, and then NBC is going to launch some standalone last comic standing shows in the summer, Treasure Hunters and America's Got Talent, and a scripted drama called Windfall. It's supposed to be a show about people winning a lottery and how they live, how it affects their lives. And then and with the reality shows here in Vegas, we had The King of Cars with the Chopper. I thought that was pretty cool. I watched that. And also we had, did you watch that?
I actually watched that garbage.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. It's different than his Chopper show. It showed how they wheel and deal with car deals and all that. I thought it wasn't bad. We should do a reality show in here with all the LV Rocks shows in here. That'd be exciting. Exciting as a funeral.
We should get about a 0.2 rating there.
There you go. Hey, and then Backstreet Boy, Nick, well, if they could get a damn reality show, then we should get one here. Backstreet Boy, Nick Carter, and his brother Aaron have pitched a reality series about their exciting family to the E! Network. Wow. And Richard Hatch is held in protective custody. Wow, this is not Battlestar Galactica Richard Hatch. It's a survivor. He's in jail, and because he's a celebrity, he's asked to be held in protective custody. So, anyway, with that, we'll bring on our mystery guest. There he comes. And exiting the, here comes the TARDIS. Exiting the TARDIS is Mr. Koenig Rules. Are you there, sir? Uh-oh.
Hey, the TARDIS up on him.
The TARDIS hung up on him. The TARDIS, Koenig, Daleks must have got to the lines here. Or they, I mean, it's Bush and the NSA tapping the lines here again. But he'll be back. Well, in the meantime, before he comes on, I gave him the ratings for World War III, which is the second parter. There he is, and he's back. I hope it's him. Might be somebody else. Might be Prison Bush. Koenig Rules, are you joining us? There he is.
Sorry, but they got caught in the TARDIS.
Oh, they got caught in the TARDIS. I hate when that happens. The door's not wide enough for some of us to get through. I'm sorry. You know?
I thought it was an outhouse.
And I was giving the listeners the rating for.
He thought he was getting the TARDIS, and he actually got in the phone booth.
I got in the wrong one.
I'm coming out of the TARDIS.
Coming out of the TARDIS. And then the rating, they did a 1.42 household rating for World War III. So it's gone up since the previous episode, Aliens
That's
on
good.
London, right?
That's very good.
Yeah, I thought the episode was outstanding, the effects. Anybody's looking for a good sci-fi show with the effects and everything, you got to watch Doctor Who. I mean, those creatures were incredible. The whole episode was top-notch, top to bottom, huh?
Yes, except could you believe that they survived?
Oh, I can. Yeah, well, I'm shocked they survived. And especially the doctor got up and said, except for humans, and he zapped those two creatures, you know. What do they call those creatures again?
The Slovene.
The Slovene, yeah, the Slovene. And I thought that was very good. And then and the mother and Mickey all know about the doctor now, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And then and the mother at the end of the episode didn't want her to go, but she said, if you saw what I've seen, you can never, you'd want to keep going, you know.
That's right, but they'll be back, both of them.
Yeah, and then Mickey ended up saving the day, right?
Yep,
and
yep.
Then
Ricky did.
Ricky made, and then it was a concoction of vinegar and eggs and all that Jackie threw onto the creatures, you know.
Right, and they blew up.
They blew up, yeah. And then the 10 Downing Street got wiped out. I mean, that's unheard of for British television, right? To wipe out 10 Downing Street.
That's right, but they have a new prime minister, right?
Yeah, that woman. Now she looks familiar. Was she on something before? Was she in previous Doctor Who's?
I don't think Doctor Who's, but she probably was in some other series, probably in Vincor. Up in the chat room knows all about her, probably has her name and her social security number.
I thought she looked familiar. I thought it'd been cool they would have had one of the former assistants for Doctor Who playing that role, just kind of a nod, you know, towards the old series.
Right. You know? I don't think she played an assistant, though.
No. And then the ending scene with that kid wiping off the bad wolf that was pretty cool scene as well.
Bad wolf will be coming back.
Yeah, and now they're building up to the next week. Of course, is the Daleks episode, right?
Yes, Dalek.
Here they come.
There they come.
I think they played the exact same sound effect on Doctor Who Friday when they showed the preview. They show, it's in the cage, you open it up, and all of a sudden it says, exterminate. they're stealing my sound or the sound effects here. So... And then I thought how that, what's his name, Joseph Green, he called a press conference and he wanted the UN to release the nuclear codes, I guess, because he explained that the British government has somehow given the UN its nuclear codes. And
yes,
then,
weapons of destruction, right?
Yeah, weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, the UN's got the weapons of mass destruction now. And then they gave the weapons back, and then they fired a missile, right?
Right.
And then, now where did the missile come from?
Oh... I think it was the sub, wasn't it?
The submarine, okay.
Yeah.
And then it's in the missile, and then they got into the closet. I guess somehow Rose figured out that because of the hurricanes or the tornadoes that, you know, they survive, and miraculously they survived the missile explosion. But, I mean, I liked it. It was top to bottom. I mean, I can't think anything was wrong with the episode. I mean, it was...
They outdid themselves, and it gets just better from this point on.
Yeah.
It really does.
Well, now, is this Daleks thing going to be a two-parter, too? Or?
No. Well, this first one is not, but the final two parts with the Daleks are.
Really? So that should be interesting. And then I'm glad to see the ratings are bouncing up a little bit more on sci-fi, you know, for the show.
Well, my guess is, too, that probably they're having some reruns with other series now starting up, like, for the holidays. So it might be that more people, too, around the holidays are sort of tuning into sci-fi more, you know?
Yeah.
Because they have time off, spring vacation, whatever. But it's good that it's going up.
Yeah.
It really is.
And then now we want to get to everybody's clamoring for the Galactica news. What's your big Battlestar Galactica news?
All right. Well, GateWorld.com released some of the plot synopsis to episode 1, which is called Occupation. However, I've got some interesting tidbits. It is true that Lucy Lawless, number three, will be in the first one.
Mm.
And Brother Cavell, Dean Stockwell, is coming back as well in the first one. And guess who? He is fracking. Ellen Tye.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not.
So Dean Stockwell is with Ellen Tye. All right.
Yeah.
Where's the colonel?
He is in a Cylon detention facility.
Yeah, what the hell? You're kidding me. Why is he being detained?
I don't know the specifics, except they're torturing him.
Oh, no.
And his eye is gouged out.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Ooh.
What? So they gouged out his eye? And so was it just hanging from his face in the episode, or what? Or is it's gone completely, huh?
All I know is he's not the same person anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
really? Maybe he'll wear an eye patch. That would be cool, huh?
Be like a pirate.
There you go. Really dark and gritty, huh?
Oh, poor Colonel. He was so nice in the season finale there with the Starbuck and all that. Now he gets...
Right, and maybe he'll have a beard. Maybe a hook for a leg.
He kept
a hook.
Parrot. Don't go that far with that character. But I mean, you know, what else do you have? He's not going to die, is he?
He isn't. But around episode 4, yes, Ellen Tye is going to die.
Whoa, no, she's leaving. Yeah. Oh man.
Well, you heard it here first, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
in fact, there's going to be. A couple significant deaths in these first couple episodes, but the one that I heard definitely confirmed is Ellen Tye.
Whoa, really? A couple of significant deaths?
Yes.
Really? I wonder who that could be.
I don't know.
They've killed off pretty much everybody else that we seem to care about in that show.
I think they're going to be creating a leaner and meaner Galactica, probably so that they can do more special effects.
So I see.
They might not have as many of the incidental characters that they've had in the previous seasons. That's my guess, because some of the cool effects really showed up in the last episode. And my guess is they're going to be creating some really nice special effects in season 3. Make it more, you know, the type of sci-fi that we've come to expect.
Well, that'd be good. I mean, it'd be good if they take a look at Doctor Who and see what they're
doing.
Yeah,
well, you know, I think they could do that, too, because with Doctor Who, if you notice, the two primary characters are the Doctor and her, and then if you add Mickey and the Mother, that's about it. So, you know, I mean, they can go in for more of those CG effects, and I think probably with Galactica, it's been amazing how they have been able to hold on to a lot of that cast from the miniseries. It really is. Some other news is that there's going to be dissension in the ranks in the Cylons. Not everyone is agreeing to this occupation plan. So my guess is that probably the 6 and the 8 might be...
Oh, hello? Hello, yes?
Might be the emissaries of peace. That were from the downloaded episode, because if you notice, even in the finale, it looked like they were a little bit concerned. She was a little bit concerned about Bautar. You know, I mean, it seemed like they didn't necessarily like what was going on. So there's going to be a lot of dissension. There's going to be a lot of torture. Well. Torture and abuse of the prisoners. A lot of double agents.
Really?
Yeah.
So all we know is Ty is going to be locked. Where's he locked up as? Yeah, on the planet in some kind of prison?
Yes. It's it's a Cylon detention facility on the planet. So it sounds to me like probably he must have created a big stink with the occupation, and that's why they put him on ice, so to speak.
That's amazing. And then. Well, is Anders, is he dead in the new season, do we know?
Actually, Anders is plotting an attack against the Cylons. So at least in the very first episode, he's very much alive. Well, and the first episode does take place, I think I told you this, 4 months later.
Well, he must make a miraculous recovery because he had pneumonia.
Maybe Starbuck got the medicine from Lee.
Really? Well,
you know.
No, because she was on the
Oh, that's
she was
right.
She was on the phone with him when the asylum showed up, and
so,
they jumped away.
He might be on his. You're right. He might be on his last legs.
Now, during this first episode, where are the Galactica and the Pegasus? Are they going to be seen at all, or they're just off?
If they are, it's going to be a side story. But most of the action is going to be taking place on the planet itself, and it looks like it's going to be jam packed with a lot of stuff going on.
Huh? So do we know if the first episode is going to be a 1 hour, or is they going to do like a 90-minute premiere?
It's going to be 1 hour, but it's the first part. So, and I got this. The title for episode two is Precipice.
Ooh, man. Precipice. Yeah, it's like they're going to go over the edge there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, because they said that they're only going to spend how many episodes on the planet they're going to get out.
Yeah, he was saying something like 4 or 5 episodes. Huh. So my guess is they're doing something similar to what they did with season 2 with the Dama, sort of in the background. I think they're going to do that now with the Dama and Lee in the background with the two battle stars, and then probably in episode 4 or episode 5 they'll get back with the fleet.
That should be that makes sense, because if Olmos doesn't want to be in all 20 episodes, it's a good way to kind of it makes sense have edit him out without having to throw him on his deathbed every season.
It's going to be very interesting when they join back up with the fleet. My guess is what would be really interesting is that Bautar is still president of the colonies, and then Tom Zarek is the vice president. So there's going to be a lot of friction when they join back up with the fleet. But this sounds pretty cool. It really does. Sounds like Ty's going to have a very meaty part in this, and Ellen sounds like she gets a little bit of a meaty part before she gets knocked off. So all those rumors that were saying she's a Cylon, nope.
Really now, huh?
Nope. Really? But I like the fact that they got Dean Stockwell
back
so early. I mean, they were in negotiations and everything, but that's cool that they, because I like Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, he's a good actor. Well, it's going to explain why they're going to kill off some of these characters to pay for his salary.
Right,
I'm sure he's not coming cheap.
And you know what, I mean, of the two, even though Ellen looks pretty nice, I'd rather see Dean Stockwell, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Well, you know, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, and then actually Ebner is saying that, according to her sources, that apparently Katie Sackhoff's going to, her hair is going to be really short in the third season.
Oh, really?
Really short. So,
because it was pretty long in that last one.
And
so
she's saying that Katie is pissed about
getting
her hair.
Well, maybe due to budget cuts.
Maybe, they got to cut her hair, cut the corners. Is her hair going to have the corners cut off? And then I wish I could get some of these people on the program. I don't know what it is, but anyway, I put a call to Leah Karen, so hopefully she'll call me back. So,
okay. What about Katie?
I haven't heard back from her. I've emailed her. They just start filming on Monday, right? The new season.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And Ron Moore's up there, and I saw a thing on Yahoo where apparently with the storyline ideas, he's going to be podcasting all that, and it is extra podcasts. So that should be interesting. And hopefully, I'm sure Aaron would come on. I hate to keep, using him as a crutch to keep, have him keep coming on the show. You know what I'm saying?
But my guess is he'll do it. Yeah. He sort of is pretty reliable when he says he's going to be on. He'll be on, right?
Yeah. And now you got your big symposium.
Yeah, that starts up tomorrow in Atlanta, Georgia. So the first of the 9 panels is in the afternoon. Mine is going to be Thursday night, Atlanta time, 6:30. So
you'll be running the panel, or are you going to be the moderator?
Yes, I'll be running one of the panels, and then we'll be doing also the Lay Down Your Burdens cliffhanger Friday. So
really?
it ought to be real cool.
Really? Ebner's saying that her hair is going to be shorter than it was in the miniseries. Oh, that's going to be really like a tomboy cut, really like a military buzz cut, probably. She looked like G.I. Jane, Maybe. Well, she'll just look attractive, no matter what hair she has or doesn't have. She'll still be my favorite.
Like her. Yeah. Probably Doris Marley on the boards probably said, geez, I'd rather keep Ellen in trash. Katie.
Now, from your sources, is there a lot of energy towards going into this third season? I mean,
yes.
How do they feel?
Yeah. According to my source, some of these scripts are the best of the entire Galactica series. I know it sort of hit a snag with after Epiphany. I liked Epiphanies myself, mm-hmm. but you know, episodes like Black Market, Scar was okay, but when they were doing some of the standalone episodes, that was when the series was faltering a little bit, not like when they had the arc. And I think probably they were experimenting, too, with the longer season, but it looks like they're going more with the arc type of stories, the things that they do best.
Yeah. And
I think they should. I mean, but if they do it, what they're claiming, much better with the special effects, I think they will attract some more fans to the show.
Yeah, well,
I hope so.
Well, then it works out good then that they're waiting, you know, taking all this extra time, they can, you know, work
on
the...
That's right. I mean, the really good sign about Doctor Who is that it was really high at first, then it dropped, and now it's coming back up. So, I mean, it sounds to me like probably by word of mouth, you should have seen Doctor Who last week with the special effects, with the spaceship crashing, and probably as a result, more people started tuning in. If they do the same thing with Galactica, you know, really focus in on a couple good special effects each week, that just by word of mouth, they might bring other people forward, especially if they have people like Lucy Lawless and
Dean Stockwell.
Dean Stockwell.
Yeah.
You know, those big names in it, too.
Yeah, so. Actually, Ebner saying that Scar was one of her best episodes.
I liked it. Yeah. I liked it. But I think a lot of people would say that Black Market wasn't very good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
I'm trying
to think of the one with the other commander of the Pegasus dying. Oh, Captain's Hand. I did like the special effects battle at the end.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I like that a little bit better than that two-parter after Pegasus.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like the special effects in that episode.
Yeah, Captain's Hand. excuse me, it was kind of a letdown because they built it up like it was going to be some huge special effects spectacular. Yeah, and then it was like, what? You know, because they had a whole interview on Galactica Station with the Zoic. You know, and I thought, well, this is going to be a slam bang, all these explosions, and it was like nothing. You know what I mean? It was good.
Right. Oh, yeah. I agree with you. And I liked the ending of Lay Down Your Burdens Part 2. I thought that was a neat special effects extravaganza. I think when they don't tell people about the special effects, then it's a lot better.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was, when the Pegasus jumped and ended up, you know, in the silent base star was starting firing on, I thought the effects in that one was a lot better than it was in that with Captain's Hand, like we were promised, you know?
That's right.
So, and then anywhere on the music CD coming out, no?
Oh, yeah. They released it on La La Land Records a day or two ago, June.
Oh.
For season 2, yep.
Really? And how about the DVD for the second half? Are they going to do a DVD for the second half, or is it
going
to be like...
I think it's going to be closer to the point, either September or October, when the series premieres.
Really? So that'll be interesting.
And there's talk, and probably they'll do this too. They'll have the extended Pegasus. They'll have that 10th expanded episode for that part of the package.
So it'll be an extended episode of the
Pegasus
that
and then
dropped.
Resurrection ship the two
parts. That should be outstanding. And I saw somewhere they're working on some kind of game or something. Ron Moore wants more of a realistic look at from Battlestar, you know, how it is now, not some kind of special effects laden game, huh?
Right, but I don't have too much information on that.
Yeah, and then so you're supposed to go Wednesday through Saturday?
Wednesday through Saturday.
Wow.
Yep.
Anybody going to show up in costume or anything? Anybody with
walking
around like they're Starbucks or?
Probably not, but
any,
I mean...
Any Muppets going to show up or Cylons? any of the Toasters going to be there? You're going to get somebody show up in some kind of costume. I guarantee it.
Well, I have a feeling that maybe one or two of the people that are posting on the board here probably might show up that's close to where they live. So.
Yeah, in costume too, right?
You know, in costume.
I think so. You see some running with the old silent or the old colonial stuff, like Lauren Green used to wear the blue thing with the emerald on his
That's right. I think we should go with the Cylon Spirit. For Ty, don't you think, huh?
By your command.
Ty, like Bly, Captain Ty, you know.
That'd be outstanding. Yeah, you could be the Cylon Spirit.
I know we're
of
making
cracker.
Fun of it. It's probably a really shocker of an episode.
Oh,
you know?
It blows away if they did that. I don't know. And then now there are.